from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Demonstrators gathered in San Jose and San Francisco on Saturday to protest last week's killing of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. President Trump ordered the airstrike against the general, whose funeral drew hundreds of thousands of mourners in Tehran today. And Iran has vowed revenge for the attacks. Coming up on Forum, we discuss the fallout. We'll get your reaction. We particularly want to hear from local Iranian Americans. What are you hearing directly from Iran? You can call us now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786 or email forum@kqed.org. And that's all next after this news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yesterday announced that she plans to take measures to potentially limit President Trump's ability to conduct military operations against Iran. Her announcement comes amid growing tensions over a U.S. airstrike last week that killed General Qasem Soleimani, one of the most powerful figures in the Islamic Republic. Massive crowds took to the streets of Tehran this morning, and Soleimani they're calling for revenge against the U.S. president and mourning him. And they've warned of major retaliation, including attacks on cultural sites, that is, President Trump has warned, and attacks on cultural sites, which are actually acts of war if Iran strikes back. Joining us to talk about this, Laura Rosen. She's a diplomatic correspondent for El Monitor. We welcome you to the program this morning. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Sanam Vakil, who is adjunct professor of Middle East Studies at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies in Europe. Welcome to the program, Professor.
Thank you for having me also.
Good to have you as well, and good to have Dornaz Memarazi, who is Iranian-American activist, former Northern California field organizer for the National Iranian-American Group. And thank you for joining us. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And let me begin, if I may, Laura Rosen, with you. And let's begin. I know we're talking about something that at this point is really speculative, but with all of these shouts of forceful vengeance from Iran and retaliation and literally hundreds of thousands in the street yelling death to America, what can we really expect in terms of payback or retaliation?
So in some ways, I think the huge turnout at the funeral for Soleimani gives Iran a little bit of space that, you know, they don't have to punch Trump back, you know, tomorrow in Iraq to show that they're not taking this sitting down. You know, they're showing that they are having many more people on the streets than the U.S. has been making a big deal about in recent anti-government protests that we've seen in Iran. So, and, you know, they've said, among the other statements, the more hostile statements you've seen, you've also seen some measures like, well, you know, we're going to think about what we're doing and we'll do it, you know, at a time and place of our choosing. So, you know, I think they're trying to think about how they might respond.
Well, the Supreme Leader has vowed revenge. So has the general who has stepped up to replace Soleimani. And one has to ask, with all these proxy wars that were being actually conducted under Soleimani's watch and all of the kind of major confrontations that existed throughout the Middle East that had Iran's hands behind them, what they might plan in the way of revenge. There's been talk, for example, of cyber attacks on the United States. There's even been talks of World War III, memes about World War III and the U.S. having to have a draft again and so forth. But you're saying essentially that you think there's probably just stalling going on here, despite all the rhetoric.
No, I mean, you saw yesterday already that the Iraqi parliament, it's a non-binding, you know, had a non-binding motion to, they're going to ask the Iraqi government to ask foreign forces, U.S. forces to leave. And that, you know, process is being set in motion. And you saw Trump responding angrily to that last night. So Iran, you know, would be quite happy to see the U.S. leave. And they're showing, in a way, their soft power by that Iraqi vote. And, you know, I think they would like to have less pressure, fewer U.S. forces on their border in Iraq. So I think Iraq is the place that I've been looking, you know, obviously even ahead of the U.S. action, Iranian-backed proxies firing rockets at bases where U.S. forces are what precipitated the recent U.S. actions. So that's, you know, Iraq's the place I've been most looking for an Iran-U.S. Confrontation.
Well, there are 5,200 troops in Iraq, and if they're pulled back, one has to ask what the consequences of that might be. Let me go to you on this, Sanam Vakil, because there's a great deal of concern that this might open up a bigger vacuum for ISIS. Already has, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. Iran, I have to also say, might be saying that it will be victorious if U.S. troops leave Iraq. But to be honest, I actually don't think that it is in Iran's interest for those troops to actually leave, because both Iranian and American troops have been working in tandem against ISIS since 2014, seeing American troops leave Iraq could, hand the problem over to Iran, and I'm not sure that the Iranians want to have that burden all to themselves right now.
Well, a lot of the concentration and focus has been certainly on Soleimani, but the militia leader, the Iraqi commander, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas, the founder of the Khatib Hezbollah, was also killed in the drone attack.
Yes, he was. And Iraqi militias are very much also mourning his death. We've seen waves of protests actually over the past few months in Iraq, very much critical of the Iraqi political elite. And I think that the death of Abu Mahdi is actually also an opportunity for political elites in Iraq, and specifically militia leaders who have been a bit back-footed, to use this crisis for their own political purposes. And it's, of course, going to very much come at the expense of ordinary Iraqis.
Sanam Vakil, again, is an adjunct professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies in Europe. And Dornaz Mamrazi is an Iranian-American activist, former Northern California field organizer and National Iranian-American Council. What are you hearing from back home? I know you actually, I think your grandfather, and you have a good deal of family back there. There's a lot of concern here by Iranian Americans about what's happening.
Well, yes, I have my immediate family. My father is living in Iran and my grandparents. So what I'm hearing from most of my family and friends is that they're really afraid of having a war, another war in the Middle East, specifically Iran. So another war in the Middle East would be really costly, and it would cost civilians' lives. So you can see the result of sanctions on the Iranian community, both here and the country. So the burden of the sanctions is on Iranian people, not the regime itself. So it would be, again, in case of a possible war with Iran. So they're really worried about that, and they're really worried about Iran's reaction to the killing of Qasem Soleimani. So we are hearing lots of different things from Iranian-American community here as well, that a bunch of them are really happy with what President Trump did to Qasem Soleimani. The rest are really angry, and they're afraid of having a possible war with Iran.
So you would say that there's real division within the Iranian-American community in reaction to this?
That's true. The Iranian-American community, it's really divided in this sense. So you saw that there was a huge crowd yesterday in Iran mourning for Qasem Soleimani. A group here and in Iran are really happy about that. And, I mean, in their point of view, they want the regime gone. So they see it as a positive thing. So in this case, I think it would be, like, really scary because they don't see the consequences of a war with Iran.
And let me go back, Laura Rosen, if I may, to you, because there's still a good deal of controversy about the decision that was made by the Trump administration on this. Both the Bush and Obama administrations declined this as an option, and it was pretty much characterized as an extreme option, too risky and maybe out of the range of options, but because of fear of major destabilization. But President Trump and Secretary Pompeo said that there was good intelligence, good stream of intelligence, that our embassies, our consulates, our military personnel were, especially in Iraq, going to be under attack. There's some credibility problems with the Trump administration that I think don't even need to be mentioned. But what do you make out of this, what's been characterized by some as razor-thin kind of intelligence?
Yeah, you know, I was at a backgrounder by the State Department on, I think, Friday, And they were talking about, oh, you know, hundreds of U.S. lives saved by this, and then, you know, imminent attack. You saw that kind of language. And they really had nothing. We were providing no information to back that up. And then they would talk about past plots that Soleimani has been tied to, you know, one that involved allegation that the Quds force he was in charge of plotted to kill the Saudi ambassador several years ago in Washington. But they weren't saying anything recent. And then yesterday, the outgoing Iraqi prime minister, when he addressed Iraqi parliament and he said he was going to ask U.S. forces to leave, said that, in fact, Soleimani was bringing back a letter from Iran. He was to meet with him when he arrived in Baghdad last week. That was part of what the prime minister was doing to mediate at Trump's request between Iran and Saudi Arabia. So, you know, maybe there was some intelligence that, you know, Soleimani was meeting with proxies in the region that the U.S. saw carrying out protests against the U.S. embassy and possibly threatening further attacks at bases in Iraq and elsewhere. But there's kind of countervailing intelligence that he may have been part of some sort of back channel about defusing tensions in the region as well. And I don't think, you know, members of Congress who've been briefed don't seem to be saying that they feel confident that there was some sort of imminent threat that was reduced by Soleimani's assassination last week.
There was a document from the White House that went to Congress, but it only had classified information, and there was really no consultation with Congress. There's pretty much a reliance here on the constitutional authority of the president as commander-in-chief. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the fact that the president administration has, for the most part, said there's a great deal of blood on, as you indicated, on Soleimani's hands. And for that reason, well, I suppose the argument is that there's reason to use the president's word, terminate.
I think there's no doubt that Soleimani has a lot of blood on his hands. You know, proxy groups that were backed by Iran made improvised explosive devices that killed many, you know, over 600 Americans after the 2003 invasion of Iraq until 2011. Now, that had halted, really, during the Obama administration. And so, you know, they're historical facts that, you know, and many Americans blood is on Soleimani's hand. Also, if you talk to the Syrian community, a lot of Syrians were very happy to see Soleimani eliminated. They feel like he was one of the principal reasons that Bashar Assad has been able to perpetrate abuses against the Syrian population. So there's no love lost by many people for Soleimani, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it was a well-thought-out decision by the United States to eliminate him last week. And Trump's decision-making, I have to say, you know, he was at Mar-a-Lago at his resort. It seems very erratic. Sometimes he feels like he doesn't want to have a war in the Middle East, and he seems kind of reluctant to use force. The last couple of weeks, he seems to be much more aggressive and unpredictable. Maybe he thinks that makes him a more formidable adversary for Iran. I think it's troubling, and I don't know if U.S. forces in the Middle East are well protected, given the kind of erratic nature of this decision.
I had asked for Iranian-American listeners to join us, and let me, in fact, go to one. I think, Hannah, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your program. So my comment is, unfortunately, despite what Republican Party, the majority, believe, and some of, unfortunately, Iranian American citizens here, I think this is really a gift to the Islamic Republic of Iran. I mean, internally, this gives them the tools they need to even suppress more the demonstrations that we recently saw for economic sanctions. I mean, right now in the news, there is no other talk of what happened to the people who were killed, who were arrested. War is really what they thrive in. And even in their foreign policy, this gives them the meaning they needed to start a war. Now, if they start a war, some of their neighboring countries would see this as a retaliation against what President Trump did. So I think we again need to question the motives of President Trump of doing something like this in the at the current time.
Hannah, thank you so much for that call. Let me go back to you, Dornaz Mamarzaya. I mean, is this, in effect, what the caller said, a gift to Iran?
I believe so, yes. It's kind of a gift to all the hardliners in Iran. So they were looking for a reason to start a tension, another tension with the U.S. government and start enriching uranium activities.
I'm also thinking more about the vacuum in Iraq. It allows Iran to have even more influence. I mean, it's had a lot of influence because of Shia connections and so forth between Iran and Iraq. But, you know, they were at war for many years, and now, to some extent, it gives Iran a different portal, doesn't it?
That's true, exactly. Iran was trying to buy allies and make allies in the Middle East. So what Qasem Soleimani did in Iraq was to train a group of militia to be able to have a backup in case of a potential war with Iran, a U.S. War with Iran. So this kind of activities, a chain of event, would give the hardliners a leverage to be more aggressive and to suppress people more. So as I mentioned, all the pressure would be on civilians, on ordinary individuals in Iran. And it would cost their lives. Look what happened 3 weeks ago as a result of oil prices in Iran. So these would be the consequences of Trump's action.
Well, I'm also interested. Let me go to you, Sanam Vakil, back to Sanam Vakil on this. It just came out, for example, some big news that John Bolton, former security advisor, has agreed that he will testify if subpoenaed. That is big news. But John Bolton also said that he really liked what took place in terms of these assassinations because Iran needs something to move it toward regime change. But it seems like in some ways it's unifying Iranians.
Yes, indeed it is. It is, as the caller said, an opportunity or a gift, or I called it today in a piece I wrote, a bounty for Iran to change the narrative away from the demonstrations that we saw inside Iran, the brutal crackdown that we saw in November, the anti-Iranian demonstrations that we saw in Iraq and Lebanon, to shift away from the impact of economic sanctions and remind the world that it also has mobilizing power, transnational mobilizing power. It has soft power, as Laura mentioned. So this is a real opportunity for the Islamic Republic that it's kind of basking in. And I think that its response is going to actually be quite slow and calibrated so that it can drag out this process and have the world wait and sort of anxiously to see how it's going to respond. So it's very much in its interest right now to capitalize and let everyone anxiously worry.
Well, the uranium treaty, the cutback in nuclear advancement on Iran is now something they feel they no longer have to abide by, the 2015 treaty. And that makes certainly down the line a difference because they're going to be developing weaponry. Nuclear weaponry.
Well, I'd like to just, if I could just jump in there. I think it's really important to not misread what the Iranians announced yesterday. They didn't break away from the treaty. They're still part of the treaty.
No, I understand that.
The administration that has left the JCPOA. But I would say that and yesterday's announcement was very much a message to Europe about Iran's intentions to remain engaged with the IAEA, to allow monitoring and inspections to continue, and to keep the JCPOA alive by a single thread, because it's in Iran's interest to keep the JCPOA alive. Walking away right now would create the crisis, would move the dial away from this crisis, which is opportunistic, and of course would start us down the escalatory path, which is not completely in Iran's interest as well.
Let me go to our listeners now and invite those of you listening to join us. I know many of you have some strong thoughts about this and feelings, and so it's an opportunity for you to let us know what they are, but also to ask any questions of our guests. We have Sanam Vakil with us, Laura Rosen, and Dornaz Memarzia, and you are welcome to join the program and the conversation by dialing in at our toll-free number. Particularly, again, want to hear from local Iranian Americans. What are you hearing? If you are an Iranian American directly from Iran, you can give us a call at 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement, so please feel free to be part of the program. That number again, 866-733-6786, or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. And let me, Laura, go back, if I may, to you, Laura Rosen, and let's talk a bit about, if we could, this maximum pressure that the president and this administration has been talking about. They've not only been talking about maximum pressure, they've been talking about really averting war. At least that's the rhetoric that's coming out of the president. But this may indeed, well, even at this point, it's drawing more troops into Kuwait, for example. This is a president who said, no more endless wars. I want to get us out of the Middle East, get us out of northern Syria, betray the Kurds, and let's move our vulnerable military away. But aren't we creating even more of a possibility of the necessity to send more troops to the Middle East and get into another endless war here?
Yeah, that's why I at least found Trump's decision-making the past couple weeks, you know, the kind of disproportionate attack after the U.S. contractor was killed in Iraq a few weeks back, followed by the killing of Soleimani. After the embassy protests, a bit of a difference from how Trump's talked and behaved in the past. And I think that you've seen a lot of reticence from the Europeans. You didn't see any congratulations, even from the UK, about the US's killing of Soleimani. And you saw Secretary Pompeo kind of complain about that the other night. And I think Putin, Russia in particular, you know, I think they had also calculated that, look, Trump's not interested in a war. He may talk tough and do sanctions, but I think Russia may be getting more concerned as well, that there could be a conflict. We might see actually more energetic mediation, intermediation efforts. You know, the Germans have said they're going to try to do direct talks. The French have already been trying for months to get the Iranians and the U.S. to the table. I could see Putin, you know, they don't want to see a war in the Middle East, another war, U.S.-led war. So I could see more international mediation kick in to try to cool this down.
Well, let me also ask listeners if they have any thoughts about how to cool this down. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts about how to de-escalate, and also what maybe some of you conjure or speculate might be the effect of all this on the markets. But let me read some comments that are coming in first and remind you that you are welcome to join us at 866-733-6786 or on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email any questions, responses, or comments you have to forum@kqed.org. Jeanette writes, why is the president allowed to conduct this whole matter at all? Impeachment seems to mean nothing in any of his activities. He should be disallowed to make any decisions until or unless he is cleared of the articles of impeachment, which brings up the question of wagging the dog. And that may be something some of you also perhaps want to weigh in on here or respond to. That is the president trying to divert perhaps American citizenry interest, or that, for that matter, involvement in impeachment articles that are already passed by the House, by, well, stirring things up in this vein that we're talking about here. William writes, if President Trump makes good on his threat to strike Iranian cultural sites, he may find himself without many allies and with a long overdue public scolding. He would be committing a war crime, so that would be much deserved. We'll hear from you when we return. We're talking about the latest on the U.S. killing of top Iranian military commander and Iraqi militia leader. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the fallout from the U.S. killing of Iranian General Soleimani, and also in that assassination, the militia leader and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas was also killed. And what questions or comments do you have? We particularly want to hear from local Iranian Americans. What are you hearing directly from Iran? You can give us a call at our toll-free number and join the program. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Durnaz Memrazia, who is an Iranian-American activist, is with us. So is Sanam Vakil, an adjunct professor in Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins, and Laura Rosen, who is diplomatic correspondent for El Monitor. Let me go to your calls, and let me go first to Fuzani. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I am an Iranian-American. I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and I'm actually quite disappointed about the response from the commentators and a lot of the American response that I'm seeing in the media about what's happened. As an Iranian that's very closely connected to lots of family in Iran, very disappointed about, you know, the regime in Iran, we are celebrating this and this action taken by the president. Qasem Soleimani is the biggest, one of the biggest terrorists in the world who has caused, you know, spreading and fueling murder and terror in so many places across the Middle East, and has so much hatred for, you know, democratic values. And I'm just very confused. And I want to say, from all the response that I'm seeing from my community of family and friends in Iran and here, we are celebrating this and we're happy about it. And we are hoping for, obviously nobody wants war, but also Iranian people have been hoping for some kind of change and support from America.
Well, that is a kind of alternate opinion from, I suppose, what we've been hearing to some degree. Dornaz Memarazi, want to comment?
Yes, as I mentioned, the Iranian-American community is pretty much divided over the killing of Qasem Soleimani. So there is no question in that Qasem Soleimani was a murderer. He was a terrorist. And, I mean, all the blame of killing many Iranians and Iraqis are on him. But the fact is that Trump's action was pretty reckless in killing Soleimani, considering that Qasem Soleimani was really close to Supreme Leader, very close to the Iranian regime and the top officials of the Iranian regime. So it would be it would cause kind of a sensitivity amongst the Iranian officials, and it would result in harsh actions. So as we saw, Khamenei tweeted that the U.S. would see such a harsh revenge in the next few months. So the thing is that, it was absolutely bad. Qasem Soleimani was absolutely a murderer, but attacking a top official of Iran wasn't the right action by Donald Trump, considering all the tensions in the region, all the disability in the region. And what we're seeing is that as a result of all the economic sanctions and the exit of JCPOA from the U.S. Resulted in many bad consequences for Iranian individuals, Iranian people. So who's going to pay the price of war, specifically in this such tough economic situation in Iran. So the cost would be on Iranian people, on the civilians.
But lest we forget, there was also an incursion of the sovereignty of Iraq in this. I mean, we have to come back to that in many respects, because the Iraqi people are also very angry, and there are certainly demonstrations going on there as well. I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Kava, who writes, to my few Iranian-American compatriots who are hoping for some type of regime change orchestrated by the U.S., look no further than what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq. It would be an absolute disaster. And here's a listener who tweets, if the mission of the U.S. in Iraq is to fight ISIS, why would they assassinate General Soleimani, one of the most successful fighters of ISIS in the region? Point worth considering, Sanam Vakil. Let me go to you.
I think that, these are all very important points to address. Qasem Soleimani was a controversial figure who indeed has, wreaked havoc throughout the region. And of course, I think also just to bring in the caller's comments, controversial and the Islamic Republic equally controversial and equally brutal. But to also speak to what has also been previously said, we have to think through the kinetic reaction of the international community and the region, and what the Iranian response is going to unleash: more instability, more difficulty, more loss of life in the Middle East. And for me, getting rid of this one individual, something that both President Bush and President Obama could have also done and chose not to do, I think was a judicious choice. And here in this moment, in this very precarious moment, President Trump chose to take out a military general without thinking out about the consequences. And the consequences are not just negative ones for Iranians or Iraqis. You know, you're unleashing this wave of uncertainty throughout the entire Middle East. You have the Saudi defense minister flying to Washington to appeal to the president for calm. You have Europeans of all stripes and political leaders equally anxious about the consequences of this reaction. And I think that is the point here.
Yeah, it not only blindsided our Congress, it blindsided our allies to a great degree.
Exactly.
Very little consultation. But I want to ask about Iraq with you again, Professor Vakil, because that government condemned this. And what does this do to the ongoing security relationship between the United States and Iraq, in your judgment?
Well, it's, you know, again, we're in this uncertain moment. We don't know what it's going to do because, of course, the Iraqi parliament has voted in favor of removing a non-binding vote, mind you, and American troops have a year to leave if the Iraqi government chooses to execute and push this forward. This is very dangerous and precarious, and, you know, leaving Iraq at this moment, opening a vacuum for ISIS, I think, would sort of reverse all of the positive gains of the past few years. It would be also detrimental for Iraqi stability. And at the same time, we're hearing the president also talk of sanctioning the Iraqi government,
yes,
which would be a terrible outcome, not just for the Iraqi government, Iraqi political stability, but for ordinary Iraqis. And this would further entrench Iranian influence inside Iraq. So I just really very much question the thinking and the policy options that are presented to the U.S. president in this moment. And, you know, perhaps it's time to sort of recalibrate and not continue to, keep doubling down on the same policies and maybe recalibrate, rethink, reposition so that the president can draw down from the endless wars, not invest in new ones, and actually focus on America first, which was all part of his agenda.
Well, let me bring another caller on, and that's Frank, who is an Iranian and wants to talk about Russia and all this. Hi, Frank. Join us.
Thank you, Michael, for taking my call. Number one, I want to separate this in three pieces. One is, this is another circus with Trump, an election year. He wants to divert this attention from impeachment. And you see Lindsey Graham on the TV defending Trump. I think he's going to be his running mate in 2020. Number two, in Iran right now, the culture of Iranian, at this point, my enemy is not my friend. Right now, enemy is enemy for public supporting the enemy, who is the government, because America has really crossed the line again. In 1952, they killed Iranian democracy by throwing Mossadegh out. In 2003, they downed the Iranian airline, the 300 people passenger on Persian Gulf, and so on. Number three, they're throwing Iran as a country to Russian arms. Now Russia is saying, see, America is not your friend.
All right, Frank, I thank you for those comments. It's good to hear from you. We'll hear from some more listeners forthwith. But let me read some comments that are coming in. And let me go back to you, Laura Rosen, if I may. This is Curtis, a listener named Curtis, who writes, the Trump administration killing General Soleimani was a dangerously impulsive decision made by a dangerously impulsive president. This is gross negligence and willful misconduct at its very worst and most dangerous. On the other hand, I have another listener who says, are there possible positive outcomes from this assassination? Can it do anything to reduce terrorist activities in the Middle East, and does it increase Israel's security in any way?
I think in the short term, there's going to be more instability and more potential risk, maybe over the longer term, given the place Soleimani had in the Quds Force, being the architect of nefarious plots and instigation of these proxy forces and activities, maybe the Iran will take a hit over the longer term and there'll be improved security. I think Israel, especially the political leadership, you know, we're happy to see the United States and Trump in particular act against Iran. I think they were actually, despite all the things Trump has done to benefit Netanyahu, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, politically, I think Israel's been concerned at what they saw as Trump's reluctance to stay in the Middle East and use force in the Middle East, and they were happy to see the demonstration of force against Iran, even though I just saw a security alert now that the U.S. Embassy in Israel is warning people, Americans, about traveling there. So I think, you know, all the region now, the U.S. is warning people about travel there, and, you know, short term, it'll become more dangerous for Americans traveling.
Again, Laura Rosen is diplomatic correspondent for El Monitor, and our next caller is Brad. Brad, join us. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I think we should take a look at the big picture, look at the plan that Islamic regime has for the Middle East. They want to create a Shiite empire throughout the Middle East. And Qasem Soleimani was the military arm for doing this. Look at Lebanon. They created the Hezbollah as a small militia group. And they gradually turned Hezbollah to a political party, which is listening to no one except the regime in Iran. And the same thing is exactly happening in Iraq. And why Iran is involved in Syria? They kept Assad in power as a strategic ally. And the same thing is happening in Yemen. They are trying to bring a Shiite power in the Yemen too. So this is the empire that the regime in Iran is going to create, and I think the more world wait to face this problem, the more costly would be the approaches to fix the situation.
Let me thank you for those comments, Brad. Let me go to you again, Sanam Vakil, about Brad's comments. I mean, there is a certain spread of Shia influence, and maybe one could argue Shia hegemony in this region of the Middle East.
I think that is definitely an interesting point. And of course, it's obvious that Iran has stronger bonds with Shia communities outside of territorial Iran. But I think,
and forgive me, General Soleimani was one of the architects of all of that. I mean, in terms of what he was able to do.
He was indeed, and he was more successful at building ties with Shia groups and cultivating those relations. But I would push back a little on the caller's analysis at seeing Iran's regional foreign policy only through the sectarian lens, because Iran has been successful in also building relationships with cross-sectarian groups, Sunnis, in Iraq, has had a relatively strong relationship, I would say, with the Assad regime for a number of decades now, having come to their support. And also intermittently positive relationships with Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and worked with different militia groups in Afghanistan, potentially also has cooperated at different times with al-Qaeda as well. And so I would rather characterize Iran as less religiously ideological, or only religiously ideological when it benefits Iran most immediately, but rather the Islamic Republic, as I see it, is much more pragmatic and opportunistic and is really willing to work with anyone, anywhere, at any time. It has taken advantage of the Saudi Emirati blockade with Qatar to build stronger ties with the Qataris. It has maintained very successful ties with Oman over a four-decade period. So having a diversified portfolio of relationships has been useful for Iran, because ultimately Iran doesn't have strong regional allies. And so having this diversified pool that it can lean on, turn to, put pressure on at various moments has been useful to help the Islamic Republic survive and weather the storm of containment, isolation, and sanctions. It has been under these sort of policies and pressure for a number of decades now.
And again, Sanam Vakil is adjunct professor of Middle East Studies with Johns Hopkins University of Advanced International Studies in Europe. But here's a listener comment. Listener writes, General Soleimani was not a national hero and did not have the national interests of Iran in mind. He had the blood of many innocent people on his hands, particularly in Syria. But I wonder, let me go to you this on this, Dornaz Memarzia. I think it's probably incorrect to say that the general was not an Iranian national hero. He was probably the second most powerful to the supreme leader figure in Iran, and you can see hundreds of thousands of people in the street giving obeisance to him and giving a kind of devotion to him that's clear that he was a hero, a major hero.
Well, he was a hero for a group of individuals, as Donald Trump is a hero for many individuals in the United States. It's kind of a general statement to say that Qasem Soleimani was a hero to many, to all the Iranian American, or
no, I wasn't
all
saying
the
to
Iranians.
All, but to a great
yes.
number. One
to,
could argue
exactly to a great number. But think about it this way: so the regime established a base amongst a group, at least a percentage of Iranian within Iran, in terms of support of the officials and all the ideologies behind the regime. So Qasem Soleimani was one of them. As I mentioned, he was really close to the supreme leader. He was one of the most important top officials in Iran. So we saw a huge crowd in Iran. But doesn't mean that the rest would believe in him, or the rest are really angry with his death. So most of the crackdowns in Iran was on him. So
let me ask you, just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but is there still, in your judgment, really a kind of movement like was associated with the Green Revolution in Iran, which never really got into full throttle and was to some extent obviously oppressed by the regime, to a great extent oppressed by the regime. But is that still there? Is that still germinal in any kind of major way?
The Green Movement was a kind of a start of a chain of events and protests in Iran, but we had a kind of uprising and protest last January, January 2018 in Iran, and we had another one a month ago, and Qasem Soleimani was behind all the crackdowns in Iran. So he was the main architect of all the crackdowns, killing more than 1,000 individuals in Iran while the country was in pure blackout and no news outlet and no media talked about it in the West. So that's why many people are angry of Qasem Soleimani. So many people are happy with his death.
There's a comment backing up what you just said to some degree. David writes, General Soleimani was an evil man, ordered many murders, but that doesn't mean, David goes on to argue, that the murders will stop now that he's dead. It is not well within the purview of his replacement to continue ordering murders now with a, perhaps a bias toward killing Americans. And there are those who argue that the general who's replacing him will, if anything, be even more perhaps ferocious. Let me bring another caller on here. And that caller is Matthew from Vallejo. Matthew, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you so much, Michael. So I have three concerns that I'll just briefly outline here. In New York, there was a rally against the war, and there were outspoken leaders of this rally that blamed these actions on Israel's government. And then in addition, afterwards, they began chanting for the destruction of the state of Israel. Iran itself has policy that's based off of eliminating what they call the Zionist entity, and they're currently building their bridge, their road to Damascus, and expanding the Shia influence, using that as a justification. This moves whole empires. And then the third example that I wanted to talk about was the way that anti-Semitism is being directly weaponized in terms of the recent riots that we saw in Iran, and how it's being blamed on the Zionist entity. And again, you have this idea of Jewish interlopers somewhere in the middle of Iran, like what few are left. And so what I want to hear now is the unequivocal and without caveat, a denunciation of these anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that are actually used to instrumentalize the life of Jews and to wage a genocidal war against the state of Israel.
Okay. I thank you for those comments. Do you want to respond, Laura Rosen?
You know, I think the Islamic Republic's hostility to Israel has been, you know, one of the major sources of the United States' hostility to the Iranian, you know, regime the past 40 years, and that, you know, at various opportunities with the media that the foreign minister has had, you know, he often gets asked that by members of the media, like, you know, why don't you, you know, they don't need to have a conflict with Israel and this And we think that, you know, many people observe that it seems to hurt Iran's chances for trying to engage with Europe and the United States. But it's very firmly part of the Islamic Republic's ideology, and I agree with your caller on that.
I wonder if you have a thought about a question from a listener, Laura Rosen, who wants to know if this is the first case of a drone killing of a formal state official rather than members of terror organizations, and what this would do to U.S. diplomatic credibility.
That is my understanding. I think I saw a New York Times report that it's the first U.S. killing of a state official, you know.
This, to my knowledge.
World War II job. And so I think that, you know, some people from the Trump administration say that Soleimani's role is this, with the Quds Force, was sort of a shadow state or part of something that's not, you know, like the CENTCOM chief. But I think from Iran's perspective, one could see it, you know, he was part of the state. So I do think that's problematic, and you don't want to normalize the changing of the rules of the game where, you know, the equivalent on the United States side, you know, that would be a legitimate target to hit, like a U.S. general. And, you know, Petraeus, the former CENTCOM chief and CIA chief, General David Petraeus, has said in the past that, you know, Soleimani reached out to him at some point after the U.S. Iraq invasion to see about some sort of dialogue. And he ran it up the chain of command, and the Bush administration ultimately did not give him the go-ahead to have that engagement. But, you know, there have been some sort of attempted engagements, or I think that people like Petraeus have seen themselves kind of strategically operating for their countries in the Middle East in a similar way to Soleimani. So it's not crazy that, you know, to worry about fallout that would impact the equivalent on the United States, you know, military.
Well, General Petraeus notwithstanding, Soleimani, in a couple of instances, at least that we know of, ridiculed President Trump and was extremely aggressive in terms of going after President Trump with visual imagery, destroying the White House and all of that sort of thing. And this is a president who, I think, whatever your thoughts about him, does take things personally. Let me bring another caller on here, and it's Sam, who's joining us from Orlando, Florida. Sam, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for having me actually on the, you know, broadcast here or on the radio TV, because I'm actually from Eastern, what's called the United States. So I just saw the number on Facebook that one of my friends posted that said that you guys are welcome to hear comments from Iranian American about the situation.
Yeah, we welcome them. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I mean, to my understanding is that, you know, President Trump did everything for the past 3 years to actually bring these people to the table, to sit down and actually talk, you know, but what can you do with a cancerous cell that does not want basically to heal? That, I mean, the main thing that they're just thinking is the destruction of Israel, destruction of, you know, all the infidels in the area. And there's just like no way to really sit down and talk with them. And I guess, you know, yes, it was a bold move. Yes, it was, you know, it may actually cause a lot of, you know, chaos and possibly even a war in the Middle East. But, you know, bottom line, it is what it is. You know, I mean, he just did not have any other choice. You know, it had to be done. Whether, you know, it was him or basically another official of the Quds Force, which is actually nowhere near, paramilitary force of the Iranian government, because they all just keep saying that it was basically there to provoke and to, establish like a Shia empire in the region to actually get closer to the, Golden Heights and to the gates of Israel. The bottom line is that, you know, I'm actually monitoring the news really closely and on through, you know, Facebook and Telegram and other social media networks. And, you know, 60 to 65% of the people in Iran are actually happy with, you know, this decision and what President Trump is actually moving forward.
Well, Sam, I appreciate your perspective, and I thank you for that call. Let me go right to another caller, and that's Adam. Adam, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. I think the conversation around basically the character of Soleimani is a divergence from the topic that we should be discussing right now. The U.S. has not been in an active war with Iran right now. There is no official war. And this was a country official that was killed in a third country. That's a clear act of terrorism. And unfortunately, that's from a country that is like going around the world with the message of like fighting terrorism. So I think this is the main topic we should be talking about instead of like how people of Iran are feeling about Soleimani or they are with him or against him.
Well, I'd like to talk also about how we can de-escalate this, but let me go to back to Professor Vakil on this. To Adam's point, if you would, Sanam Vakil. Sanam Vakil, do we have you?
Oh, you hello? Wanna... Do you have me? Do you have me? Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can, but we couldn't for a little bit there. Yeah, I'd like you to address the caller's point that this is an act of terrorism on the part of the United States, essentially.
You know, I think it's probably I'm not equipped to discuss sort of the legal backing of whether this is an act of terrorism or not. But I would say this. Or I would say a few things. First of all,
seconds left, unfortunately.
Easy to see this as an act of terrorism. I think that obviously the American government has pursued many policies that are perceived to be as reckless in the Middle East. But Qasem Soleimani is registered as a terrorist. The Quds Force is a foreign terrorist organization, and it is responsible for much loss of life in the Middle East. This action and reaction with the United States and the Islamic Republic has been nothing but negative for both sides, for many millions of people around the region, and ultimately negotiations between
we're going to have to leave it there because we're flat out of time. But thank you, Sanam Vakil. Thank you, Laura Rosen. And thank you, Durnaz Mamarzia. When we return, it's all about Jerry Brown. Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.